We have talked several times in recent months about situations in which police and people in mental crisis come into contact, sometimes with tragic results. The case of Brian Babb certainly ended in tragedy. Police shot and killed him at his home in Eugene on March 30th of this year. The Lane County District Attorney ruled the shooting justified. Brian Babb's loved ones want to make sure his death means something, like having no one else meet the same fate in the same situation down the road. Stephanie Babb, his sister, joins us on the phone today. Stephanie, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, thank you.
What can you tell? Now, Brian, his website is Captain Brian Babb. If people are interested in going there, it's some interesting materials there. What can you tell us about Brian's military experience?
Well, he was in Afghanistan twice. He went to Katrina. He was in Afghanistan and then went to Katrina and then back to Afghanistan.
All right, so served in the Army National Guard, is that right?
All right, in the Army National Guard, that's right.
So deployed a couple times. And then went to Hurricane Katrina, too, you're saying?
Yes, he did. He actually did.
Well, he got to see a lot of bad stuff, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. So what was he like when he got out of the military?
he had changed. It was hard for him. He was on full disability for PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome. He had a TBI, traumatic brain injury, that he had acquired during combat. An interpreter next to him had been killed, and the blast injured my brother. And I think, like most people that have been in war situations, they come back and things look a lot different. They feel different.
Was he, you say, on full disability, so he wasn't working or anything like that?
No. No. I mean, he had construction companies and stuff, but at that point in time, just recently, he wasn't working full-time, no.
How big a support system was there for Brian?
Brian had a huge support system. He has plenty of family. My dad was an incredible support to him, as was my older sister. A lot of friends, a lot of family. As you can see, if you've seen us at any of the press conferences or rallies, he's got a large family. We're not going to go away until something's done so it doesn't happen again.
I asked you what he was like after he got out. I didn't ask you what he was like before he got in and just how different those were. You said he changed, but, I mean, changed in what ways?
Brian's very dynamic, or was very dynamic, gregarious, funny, intense. When he came back, he was a lot more moody, withdrawn, caused a lot of problems between him and his wife. She didn't feel like she could really reach him, and that makes a lot of sense, seeing what he'd gone through. Brian beforehand, yeah, I don't know how to explain it, except for he was my big brother, and if something had to be done, he'd do it. He was that kind of person.
He was the guy who would be there when you needed something.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so people were, it sounds like, were able to return the favor when he got back. But how much was he willing to accept the help of people? Somebody like that can often be a little resistant to...
A little prideful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Brian was acutely aware of his situation. He was really intelligent, which I think it made it harder for him to understand what was... Or not harder for him to understand. I think the fact that he understood so well made it more difficult for him to accept what was going on. The fact that he knew intellectually what was happening to him and what the results were with the PTSD and the TBI, that he was having to deal with these things and learn new coping skills and going to counseling and going to the VA. He was on a tremendous amount of medication. He went to his doctors regularly and he was in chronic pain. And my brother, being as physical as he was, he was a soldier, and that inhibiting his way of life inhibited him personally as a man. And I think that damages people. It hurts people.
He couldn't feel like himself from the sounds of it.
No, I don't think many people do when they come back from something like that.
Were there moments when you got flashes of the old Brian where you thought, you know, he's gonna make it through this, he'll be the person he used to be?
I don't know. I haven't spent a lot of time with my brother in the last couple of years. Brian would be the last person I would ever expect that he wouldn't make it through at all. Brian's a fighter, obviously. I mean, you know, he's a soldier. And like I said, very, very intelligent. Brian's always Brian. That was the thing about Brian, is he had a huge personality. I mean, he was soulful. He was who he was. and he was a fighter. So, I mean, you know, it's not like somebody's going to go over there and completely change and be somebody you don't know, but there's those aspects. It's an invisible injury with PTSD. And you know, a long time ago, he told me that it was hard for him to go into the VA. This is way, way back when. And to see people who were actually hurt, physically hurt, that had scars and burns and that kind of thing. And he'd walk in, and he was a handsome man, strong, capable, and yet he wasn't. All his injuries were on the inside, and the TBI and you know, his neck, his head, traumatic brain injury, that kind of thing. And so it was hard for him to go in there and, you know, want help when he could see people were hurting more than him.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew he had to, and he did.
He accepted the help then. It wasn't like he just pushed it all away.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
We're talking about Captain Brian Babb, shot by Eugene police on March 30th of this year. Stephanie Babb is Brian's sister. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. What concerns did you or the other members of the family have about where his behavior might lead? I mean, had there been escalations of stuff with Brian?
Yeah, there had, but it wasn't that unnatural, not in the way, not Brian's personality, not from our family. we're kind of high-energy people anyway, and I don't know how to explain it. He'd had a couple incidents that would, you know, lead up to something, well, not lead up to this, because I don't think anything should have led up to this. But it was just an indicator that he was having a hard time coping. And he was quite aware of it, as were, you know, anybody who was close to him. You know, he was very vocal about what was going on with him. And, you know, he's left his son and daughter. You know, he was killed March 30th, and his son turned 16 on St. Patrick's Day. And his daughter, Kaylee, is 19, and she goes to college in Portland. And, you know, he leaves a legacy. He leaves a family. And he was a father. He was my brother. He was a husband at one time, and he's a son. And
you mentioned a husband at one time, and you did mention that his wife had trouble dealing with it. Did the conditions that Brian returned in when he came back, when he got discharged from the military, did those lead, do you think, directly to the divorce?
I don't know. I would imagine so. It's not something that I think that's more personal. It's their relationship. Stephanie's been fantastic with her support, amazing, and we've all come together because this shouldn't have happened. There's no reason for this to have happened, and if we can do anything to make sure it doesn't happen again, we're going to do it.
So let's talk about March 30th. I mean, you said you hadn't seen a lot of Brian recently, but what were you aware of? I mean, how did you become aware of the events of that day?
Well, that's interesting you should ask. my Aunt Marlis, we had horses out at the barn. She has a barn, and we were boarding out there. And she'd left after feeding the horses, and I saw her. And I went over to my other aunt's house, and I got a phone call from her not too long after. And she said, Stephanie, there's something wrong. My cousin, her son, was friends with my brother's neighbor. And that neighbor called my cousin and said, you know, Rex. They called Rex and said, there's something going on with your cousin. There's a whole bunch of police cars out here. And he called his mom, Marlis, my Aunt Marlis, and Marlis headed right over there. And she got there 10 minutes after he'd been shot and killed. And then she called me, and I called the rest of the family. And she stayed there. They left his body laying in the doorway for 6 hours, and she stayed the whole entire time. And, yeah, that's how we found out.
That's a major point I noticed that the family has raised a couple times about how Brian's body was left lying there for 6 hours. What were you told about the reasons for that?
That they had to investigate. And what's ironic about that is, you know, I've got 18 DVDs of evidence, and watching, not only were they encrypted at a certain point, I had to find somebody who knows computers and this kind of thing to actually see the full view. And then the Bearcat, which is the armored vehicle, and I'm kind of jumping ahead in regards to the story and what happened. Where was that? Okay. armored vehicle, they claimed that the audio didn't work, and I guess the decision-making process happened within the armored vehicle in regards to what they were going to do with my brother or about my brother situation at that time. And to go back, the audio didn't work, and then parts of the video didn't work. But then there's definitely a part where they, after they shot him, ran over 3 6-foot fences. They shot him from less than 100 feet away, ran over 3 6-foot fences into the back of his truck, rammed the truck into the tongue of his travel trailer, and pulled up to the front of the house, and then they waited 4 minutes. Their explanation is they were waiting to see if he was going to get up and shoot anybody. Personally, if I had a high-powered rifle with a scope at 100 feet and I shot somebody in the head, I would think they were dead. So the gist of this is after my sister cleaned up the rest of my brother once they removed him, she was sitting at his desk and looked up in the wall, and the one shot that had been fired during the incident, the slug was still in the wall. The police hadn't even gotten it out. They didn't know where it was. They didn't even look for it.
When she called police and said, come get the bullet?
Yep, absolutely. There's been no ballistics done, no forensic investigation. We're still waiting for the shooting board review. We've got the IDFIT report, which is the Interagency Deadly Force Investigative Team report. It's 178 pages. And first-person accounts from neighbors and whatnot. I want to make it really clear about something. Brian was on the phone with his VA counselor. He had been on the phone with my dad that morning. Mm-hmm. He was under great distress.
The VA counselor, was this Becky Higgins?
Yeah, Becky Higgins.
We've had her on before. She's talking about the situation. Yeah, and she was trying to talk him down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she was getting successful. You know, she had said that he joked with her. He had talked to her. He'd made an appointment for the next day to see her. I think he was agitated. But the point is he was in his own home. He was engaged in no criminal activity. She wanted to do, it's her job. She wanted to have a well check done. And so she called police while she was on the phone with him with another phone. And within 45 minutes, a SWAT team showed up at my brother's door with snipers. He's on a panhandle lot, snipers on his neighbor's roofs, and a Bearcat, an armored vehicle, and rifles pointing at him. Now, this is a man with PTSD, right? He was a sharpshooter. My Aunt Linda said it the best, and I don't quote her well, but if you have a child that's scared of the dark, you don't dress up as a boogeyman and scare them in the middle of the night and think that it's going to cure them. That's what happened to my brother. It triggers that. It's everything that could have happened to him that shouldn't have. They were yelling at him with a bullhorn. People say he came to the door with a gun at one point, but what's not out there is he came to the door 4 times and said, leave me alone, I'm fine. And he cussed a lot, but he was like, leave me alone. His roommate had been in there. The roommate came out. He wasn't harming any of the neighbors. Neighbors were standing around, kids playing in the yards. Police didn't tell them to go inside. My brother, you know, and he's friends with all his neighbors. All the neighbors have been to the rallies and the press conferences. They've been incredibly supportive. And Brian was, leave me alone. Let me deal with this. He was utilizing the coping skills that he had been taught, and he was using them. And within 45 minutes of that phone call, my brother was killed. He was murdered. He was shot dead in his doorway.
Brian Babb died on March 30th in Eugene. We're talking to his sister, Stephanie Babb, here on the Jefferson Exchange. If you have something you want to add to this or questions or comments, join us at 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. You've talked about the Bearcat, the approach, the armored vehicles. You have spoken publicly, Stephanie, about cases with people who appeared to be dangerous taken into police custody with non-lethal means.
Yeah.
What kinds of conversations, if any, have you had with the police about why this case, why Brian's case was handled differently?
According to Alex Gardner, when my mom and I went and talked to him regarding it being deemed justified, the shooting being deemed
Alex Gardner,
justified,
the DA in Lane County.
Right, correct. He said that, one, because Brian was a veteran, and they weren't sure how he was going to respond. You think, come on, you show up in a military vehicle to a man who's done nothing but be a soldier all his, you know, his adult life and point a gun at him. You know, I mean, it's a natural response, and that has to stop. There has to be a stop gap in regard, and that's what Brian's bill is about. There has to be a stop gap there. There has to be something stopping between we're going to respond with a brutal force, deadly force, to stop this. Now, my brother was suicidal. What's the point of pointing a gun at somebody saying, don't shoot yourself? What, does that make sense? It doesn't to me. Personally, makes no sense at all.
You mentioned Brian's bill. So this is an effort to take this beyond just this individual case and affect more lives potentially. What is Brian's bill?
Brian's bill is what we're doing is advocating a law to mandate a standardized protocol for all domestic law enforcement across the nation to utilize a specialized task force working in conjunction with outsourced veterans specializing in crisis training to respond to veterans in distress. So when they get a call about a veteran and, you know, they know it's a veteran, they're in distress, they're in a bad place, that there's going to be somebody else that's going to come forward, and instead of coming at him in a military kind of style that's going to trigger everything that he's ever gone through, that there's going to be somebody who's been through that too and can say, hey, buddy, we're here for you. We can hear you.
Have you gotten anything back from Eugene Police or anybody else in terms of like, well, gee, that'd be difficult, we'd have to hire more people, anything like that?
Nope. They haven't said much. Mm-hmm. They're not saying much at all. I don't, you know, as far as I'm concerned, my mom's looked up the statistics and money's involved, and the VA has plenty of money to pay for it. And I think that it's well worth the cost to save a life. You mentioned before that about the police subduing another man. 2 weeks after my brother was murdered, I got an automatic call from my son's school, Churchill High School.
Mm-hmm.
He's 15, and they said the school was on lockdown. Man, it scared me. They had also locked down Kennedy Middle School and McCormick Elementary School, and there was a man in a residential area shooting his gun, and he was suicidal. They spent 8 hours negotiating with him and subdued him with sponge bullets. That ended in a peaceful solution. Nobody died. So what makes the difference between what happened to my brother and what they did with this man?
And what kinds of answers have you received to that question?
That he was a veteran. That
they just assume then a veteran is going to be more dangerous?
Yes. That was my understanding, absolutely.
You know, I know I've asked it a couple different ways. Let me ask a little more directly. Have there been any conversations between your family and the Eugene police about procedures, protocols, or have you just sort of been talking at each other?
There hasn't been a lot of talking at us, that's for sure. We've tried to get as much information as we can. They really haven't said much at all to us, and that's why we've been making so much noise. Because I believe that we deserve answers. I believe everybody deserves answers. There is no reason for this. The only thing I do have is what Alex Gardner has told us. And there's a few other reasons I can guess at them, but ultimately we don't really have a lot of answers at this point. It's very frustrating.
You quoted some figures at a news conference about veterans and PTSD. Do you recall some of the figures? They were rather shocking at the time and still are.
Well, my mom would be good at that. I do know that 22 veterans a day die by police or suicide. My brother, March 30th for the year of 2015, was the 100th person or veteran that had died this year. They're shocking statistics. And I think what's hardest is that going online and we're looking these things up and you can't find them. My mom called the VA and she called the suicide hotline and she was put on hold for an hour. And she's a retired registered nurse. Mm-hmm. And she said, this doesn't work. This is a system that's failing. This isn't working correctly. So there needs to be something done. She was also told that the statistics aren't put out there because they're afraid that other veterans will hear that other veterans are committing suicide and getting killed, and so they won't reach out for help. And I think that's part of what Becky Higgins had such an issue with, is that she was really trying to help, and their reaction, this their overzealous, militaristic campaign against my brother was uncalled for. It was unprecedented. Actually, I shouldn't say that, because I just proved the fact that it was it had precedence, that they'd done this before. So those are the statistics I can just call off the top of my head.
Okay. Well, we'll research those and see if we can come up with a future program that deals with those at length. The trajectory of Brian's bill. Have you talked to, for example, Representative Peter DeFazio about sponsoring such a bill in Congress?
Yeah, I've left messages with him. I've been to Wyden's office, and I'll get a hold of Merkley, and I've talked to Brzezinski. So, yeah, we're working on it in that angle.
Mm-hmm. What are the other steps you're taking? I mean, there's still a lot of activity. You have the Captain Brian Babb website up with a lot of information there.
CAPT. It's not actually the correct abbreviation for a captain in the Army National Guard, but the website is CAPTBrianBabb.com. And then we're starting a Brian Babb, Inc., a nonprofit organization, and so we can really move this through to the next level and get as much support as we can.
It's an amazing amount of drive in your family, I sense, just from watching the news conference video. Yeah. That you guys are determined. This is okay. Brian's, that's a tragedy, but let's move this ahead.
Absolutely, you're right. We're not going away. That's just the way it is. There's too many of us. Brian was too. Brian was my big brother. How do you not do something? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're definitely doing something, doing a lot, in fact. Okay, so Captain Brian Babb, which is CAPTBrianBabb.com, if you want to find out more information about the incident and the family's perspective on it and what they'd like to do. Stephanie Babb was Brian Babb's sister and still is. And Stephanie, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care.
Mm-hmm.